Here for the Lowe's early Black Friday deals? You're right on time for some of our biggest savings. We're talking up to 50% off select major appliances, plus up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Holiday lights going up soon? Select ladders are up to 50% off right now. Get Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 11/19. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details. At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Travolting presents Bobbin for Robin. Hosted by Jeff Sweeney and Stuart Elmore. Covering Jacob the Liar. Enjoy the episode.
This is the score to this movie. Oh, this is the Schindler's List music.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Folks, because this week we're talking about a Holocaust movie. I'm just going to cut right to it. We're just going to cut through the fat on this one, Stuart. We're going to get to the meat of the matter.
You and I are both very tired today.
We're both very I wouldn't say call myself very tired. I'm a little tired.
I'm pretty tired.
I'm always a little tired.
Yes, we're covering a 1999 American Holocaust film directed by Peter Kasovitz, Jacob
the
Liar. Can
I cut straight to the meat?
Oh,
and just say that this whole show, we've covered good movies, we've covered bad movies. Robin has either been a benefit or like kind of a neutral aspect to the movie. This is the first one we are talking about where I am going to straight up start just saying Robin is 1,000,000,000% the problem with this movie.
No, I said that in Patch Adams.
But like, even at that, like, it's not like disastrous to the movie itself.
The
Patch Adams is already bad.
Yes.
And he is bad in it.
Yes.
Jacob the Liar has the material to be good.
Okay.
But Robin, I think, is such a disaster in the center of it that he's bringing the whole ship down with him.
Patch Adams, he's bad and the movie's bad.
Yes.
Jacob the Liar, the movie could have been good, but Robin makes
it
bad.
This is arguably like a solid enough movie.
Yeah. But Robin makes it
Robin
bad.
In it okay. is like a disastrous.
Okay.
Like the poster.
I see the difference in our terminologies here. We both think Robin had a really bad performance in Patch Adams, but it's under the guise of Patch Adams already being a bad movie as it is. Whereas Jacob the Liar can be like kind of a solid movie, but it's hindered by the fact that Robin Williams is in it.
Yes.
I would agree with that. He does kind. He takes this movie into a very weird place.
Yes.
Being Robin Williams. Because, first off, he's not Jewish. He's not Polish.
The director of the film is Jewish.
Sure.
And most of the cast is Jewish.
Right.
Robin is like the weird hole at the middle of it.
We've covered Moscow and the Hudson, and now we're covering Jacob the Liar. And, you know, this feels like it's like almost like Robin trying to like not apologize for Moscow and the Hudson, but be like, remember Moscow and the Hudson? Yeah, I did that movie. I did good in that movie. Here's the thing, Robin. You did okay in Moscow and the Hudson. That does not give you the license. That does not give you the license.
It's less even like the license. Like, I think about Spielberg doing Schindler's List and Munich. Are his two big, like, kind of like Jewish identity movies.
Yes.
And Schindler's List stars Liam Neeson and Ben Kingsley, neither of whom are Jewish.
Yes.
And then Munich is Jeffrey Rush and Eric Bana and Daniel Craig and Kieran Hines. None of these men are Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I think it still like maintains a certain degree of authenticity to it.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps it's the difference in direction from Peter Kasowitz to Steven Spielberg, maybe the best to ever do it. But Robin is like endlessly distracting in this.
Mm-hmm.
And his whole performance is so like hackneyed and like soapy.
Yeah. Yeah. Like it, cause Robin is playing this role. First up, Jacob the Liar is based off of a 1969 German novel of the same name written by Jewish author, Jurek Beckert. And, yeah, I mean, like it's set in the ghetto of German occupied Poland during the Holocaust, tells of a Polish Jewish shopkeeper named Jacob Heim, who attempts to raise the morale inside the ghetto by sharing encouraging rumors that he claims to have heard on a radio that doesn't actually
exist. The base story of the novel, which is not like a classic novel by any means, is like in like the darkest place, people find hope, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Which is fine. And there's a movie that came out the year before that's called Life is Beautiful, which is the exact same premise.
I was gonna see how long it would take us for us to get to that. Life is Beautiful.
This movie, like, it's just like the effort this movie is putting in, and we talked about this last week during Patch Adams,
mm-hmm.
where this is like this and Patch Adams are the two movies that Robin Williams' company helps push over the finish line. Mm-hmm. And get made.
Mm-hmm.
And it really just feels like he feels the desire after winning his Oscar to tell an important story, mm-hmm. and to tell a story that means something to him specifically, mm-hmm. which to him is in a dark place, like bringing light and humor. That's what he wants to do with his life.
Yes.
Without like at all comprehending how like he can best serve that idea. Because for what's going on in this movie, he is not best serving the story.
Right.
Like his whole thing is just like, oh, what if I was a little funny guy?
Yeah.
I don't know,
this movie was giving like Doubtfire vibes.
A little bit.
Right? Like, isn't the whole thing of like you mentioned like Doubtfire, like
there's no naturalism in his performance.
No.
It's very a review from Roger Ebert cited it as a lugubrious.
Lugubrious.
Yes.
I love Roger Ebert, don't you?
Yes. It's like his whole performance is just so hackneyed in this. And like it feels like he's giving a performance that where he's like, I want this to be important. And so I will give an important performance.
Yeah.
He's not like giving a performance ultimately.
Yeah.
I don't know. I do you feel the same way?
I do feel the same way. Like I never saw Life is Beautiful.
Like I'm sorry, you tell me your movie is Robin Williams brings laughter to the ghetto during World War II. I'm like, out immediately.
Okay.
I am.
Well, it's funny enough, is you know, like there's the rumor story that like during the making of Schindler's List that Spielberg would bring Robin Williams on set to do like stand up.
Yeah, to keep
morale up.
Yeah.
So it's funny that like
he kind of just literally does that.
I heard about that story before I heard that he had done this movie years later. And it almost makes me wonder, it's like, did that story get enough press that Robin did stand up bit on a movie set about the Jewish Holocaust?
Yeah.
And that somebody's like, oh, you know what? That actually would make a good movie with Robin. I'm like, in what fucking world?
Like, we talked about how Robin, like, he's not Jewish, but he's always, like, felt very accepted within the community and, like, has a lot of Jewish friends and whatnot.
Yeah.
And
so he said he's Jewish by commission.
And knowing the man that he was, it does really feel like he wants to make this movie for the Jewish community. And I feel like I'm just going to repeat myself, but, like, It's a terrible decision on his end.
Well, because like at any point do you feel like what are the stakes of this movie? Before I should say, like, before the part of the movie where, like, the Gestapo start to hunt down this supposed radio, what are the stakes of this movie, really?
Like, the stakes of this movie are ultimately, like,
he's going to get caught. Like, does he get caught? Okay, but, like, what happens if he gets caught not having the radio? Because, like,
well, it's what happens at the end of the movie. Is he has to denounce it or he gets shot.
Well, like, yes, but I'm thinking here, it's like, this is before I knew that the Gestapo were going to find out about this radio and then try to find it. Whereas in before, it's like they're in the ghetto and I think, okay, the stakes involved should be like, you know, they're trying to survive in this ghetto and like he's trying to raise morale to keep people going. But by raising morale, it makes people want to resist, which puts people more in dangerous harm. Like, again, like the story has all the bones and the structure there.
It's
like the Robin's performance doesn't make me feel any.
There's no tension.
There's no tension with his performance.
His performance is like he's so committed to like paying respect and getting this right that there's like basically not a performance going on.
Interesting.
It's so annoying. I think a lot about like. Obviously, this movie invites comparison to Schindler's List. There's a lot of movies about the Holocaust, but this movie is clearly evoking the specific style of Schindler's List. It tries to do similar camera. It's very Steadicam heavy.
Mm-hmm.
It's very Spielberg-y.
Yeah.
Or at least trying to be. And it does have impressive production elements. There's one shot I really love in this movie.
I think I know which one you're talking about.
Is it towards
the end?
No, it's early. It's when the girl first enters his apartment. It's really good at playing with eyelines and like,
okay,
because you're like Robin Williams walks into his apartment. You're with him. Then the girl steps in. She kind of stops, and we drop down to her eyeline. And as she moves her head, the camera starts tilting, and then we're finally with Robin again as he continues his walk. So like we take her eye view of like her seeing this apartment.
Yeah,
it's a really well done shot. But besides that point, like. Schindler's List was a movie that got a certain degree of criticism, but has mostly like endured because of this, that instead of just being a movie about the Holocaust, which it is, it is also a very entertaining movie. Mm. Like Schindler's List is extremely entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
I watched it a few months ago and like that movie is propulsive and you know, you're constantly like,
there's a tension.
You're playing the game with Schindler's List. Like Schindler trying to get more and more people, the games he's playing to like defeat Amon Gott and like outplay him.
Yeah.
Like there's a real like in like movie there.
Yeah.
In a certain way that like, whereas this story probably reads really well on the page for mm-hmm. this movie, there is a certain like lack of propulsion in the plot.
Yeah.
Because it really is like he lies once, everyone thinks he has a radio, and he tells stories, he gets caught, and he dies.
Yeah.
And along the way, the biggest risks that he has put in are, one, he is trapped in a toilet stall once.
Yes.
Two, his friends are all trying to find the radio and destroy it, and they can't because it doesn't exist.
Yeah, like, I guess I just never found myself worried for Robin's, like, safety up until the Gestapo scenes. Like, it's when the Gestapo, like, the Nazis start to, like, they get wind of the radio and they start hunting around is when the movie actually like takes a different like pace to it, because the pacing in this movie, and again, it's not helped by Robin's conviction and his performance and his character, is that I don't know what I'm supposed to be like worried about or fearful of, because if it's supposed to be like, well, he's made up this lie about the radio and now he's gone too far. So now we're running into the issue of, what's he do once they find out that the radio doesn't exist? Like, I don't know what could happen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, cause like there's no scene where Liev Schreiber ever says like, your radio is the reason why I haven't killed myself.
Yeah. Like Bob Balaban doesn't kill himself because of the radio, like ostensibly, but they never like display that. Like you're never like kind of swept up in that.
Right.
Then the movie, like, cause the second he says he has a radio and yada, yada, you know, the plot of this movie is going to be,
he has to make up lies.
The Nazis find out, they take him. He has to denounce having the radio or keep the illusion going and sacrifice his life. You know how it's going to play out.
Yeah.
You can see it.
Yeah.
And that is exactly how the movie plays out. Yeah. And it's not a problem. It's just along the way, like, you have to...
Oh, my God. Oh, my
God.
Like,
there has to be a certain degree of, like...
Urgency, agency.
Urgency to it.
Like, because I'm telling you, man... Because
there's never a risk... Like, I never feel the risk of the Nazis finding out.
Same. Well, you said, like, this movie of... There's been a few Robin Williams movies where I've checked out.
Yeah.
Partway through the movie. But this movie... Holy shit.
Yeah.
I was like falling asleep in the middle of this movie because like the end of it is so much just like business bullshit of like them going to the train yard, grabbing the food and picking the partners.
Yeah, there's a lot of like business in the middle.
There's a lot of like the Lee Schreiber getting a wife business. There's the little girl, which I like the scenes with Robin and the little girl.
Robin and the little girl is the best part of the movie.
Best part of the movie. But like even then it's like the stuff that's happening.
What's the risk of the little girl being there?
Exactly.
Yeah, there's never a tension of her being present.
The scene where he like pretends to have the radio with the little girl,
that's great.
And then he puts the megaphone on and they dance, like
that's a good scene.
I'm like,
good scene.
God, I locked in for that scene. I'm like, where was this movie?
Like,
where was this movie?
Like, not to mention, but like, the Holocaust is not like it's a very depressing like. Evil occurrence in history.
Yeah.
And just like watching the kind of like the day-to-day nature of it is not like super engaging because you're just sad watching it. Like you're sad watching actors recreate the Holocaust.
Yeah. I have not seen The Zone of Interest.
The Zone of Interest is an incredible movie.
Yeah.
And it has a real take.
Yes.
Do you know the pitch of that movie? How it operates?
It's basically like we never see the camp.
You see the camp over the wall.
Yeah.
But you were just following. It's a domestic drama about a family or the family of the commandant of Auschwitz.
Yeah.
And you're just kind of like in their house watching their day to day occurrences. And it's about how easily you can just ignore the horror at your window.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible movie.
Yeah.
That and Schindler's List are, I mean, I haven't seen like a tremendous amount of Holocaust movies, but the best ones I've seen, they're both fantastic.
Yeah.
And there's kind of a point to them.
Mm hmm. This one doesn't feel like there's a point.
What I like, I think the ending of this is good. And I think the ending almost kind of like wins me back.
Hmm. Okay.
Because like it's what the whole movie should ostensibly be about. I'm just going to jump to the end.
Yeah.
Because the end of this movie is Robin Williams gets shot saying that the radio was true. He gets shot and all of the Jews get loaded onto the trains to the camps.
Mm-hmm.
It's the end of the movie. And then Robin has a little narration where he's like, they all went to the camps and we never saw them again.
Yeah.
Or as I like to think, like he kind of does like an imagined ending, which is apparently present in the book as well.
Yeah.
Where it's like, what factually happened is they all went to the camps and we don't know what happened to them.
They
probably all died.
Yeah.
But we can like create this kind of a happy ending for them where they're intercepted by Soviets along the way.
I never thought of that as an imagined ending.
Because he says like the movie kind of portrays it as if it's real, but then like he does have a quick line where he's like, maybe it wasn't like that at all. It's continuing his lies from throughout the movie.
Yeah.
And that's what the whole movie ostensibly should be about is the idea of like in this, you know, the way we tell stories to find light in the darkness and, you know, find a way out of these dooms that we have.
Yeah.
But the first half of the movie or the first 90% of the movie is like never quite doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Because he like kind of tells like little stories and then gets voted president of the ghetto.
Well, it's like the movie never builds up to this moment. Yeah. This movie the ending may feel like good, but I never feel like the middle of the movie never like it does. The middle of the movie doesn't do enough work for that to feel like a good payoff.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Like
because it's got that one scene with him dancing with the little girl, and I think that's like the best scene of the fucking movie right there. Like that's the juice we needed of the whole movie, where he's like, because there's not a lot of scenes. There's like one scene. I'm trying to think of the first time he tells somebody about the radio, and it's like the barber.
Yeah,
or no, it's Lee Schreiber who tells the barber.
Yes.
Again, the fact that we're Lee Schreiber
is the first person he tells about.
The fact that we're asking about this is the problem of the middle of the movie. The two scenes I really remember in the middle of the movie is him dancing with a little girl and him talking about the Russian troop movements and the American tanks and the jazz band.
Yes.
Those are the two things I remember in the middle of the movie. Everything else is a wash.
Because at the end of the movie, when the little girl like sees in within the vision, sees the Soviet tanks, and then she in her mind's eye, like adding onto the imagination, adds a jazz band there.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, she learned from him. And it's a very nice sentiment.
Yeah.
It just, you know, the movie struggles to earn it.
Yeah.
Like, even if the ending is good to, it's a good ending to a movie that isn't there.
Yeah.
Not fully.
Right.
And a big problem with that is that just like in all the Robin scenes, he's just like walking around like, oh yeah, you know, I'm just trying to, you know,
I'm just trying to make people happy, but I can't do anything right. No. This is another movie that had the label of Blue Wolf Productions by Robin and Marcia Garces Williams's production vanity label. This Patch Adams and Mrs. Doubtfire. Then after this, they don't have the Blue Wolf production logo on their productions. But this was this goes to say that this was another movie that, like, as you said, Jeff, like after Robin wins his Oscar, you know, he's trying to like use his clout and accolades for something that he feels like is something worthy of him to do, which is Patch Adams and this movie. And this movie, I would feel like, is there a world where Robin could have done good in this movie? Or do you think it's just miscast entirely?
I mean, there's a world. There's always a world.
I genuinely don't know.
There's always a world. Like, if this movie is, like, directed by Steven Spielberg, let's say. Let's say.
Yeah.
That's just a world where
pour the magical lotion on it. Yeah.
I don't think a world where Robin is in charge of his own character would, or has, like, that much stake in his like performance. I don't think so.
Yeah.
In a world where there's a director who knows how to shape him. Mm-hmm. I do think so. And I don't want to like just throw Peter Kasovitz under the bus. He hasn't really directed much else that I'm aware of, but,
a
little tired.
It's this movie.
But I just like, I don't want to throw him under the bus, but like, he's not getting that performance out of Robin in this. You know?
Mm-hmm. Roger Ebert said, Williams is a talented performer who moves me in the right roles, but has a weakness for the wrong ones.
That's very much true.
And I think that's very much true for this role with Robin, is I think this is a wrong role for him, and therefore he's weak at it.
He says, I prefer Life is Beautiful, which is clearly a fantasy, to Jacob the Liar, which is just as contrived and manipulative, but pretends it's not.
He gets a golden Razzie nom.
For this and Bicentennial Man combined. Because the Razzies do like the combined awards.
Just make you feel extra bad about yourself.
Yeah. But he does lose to Adam Sandler, who was nominated for Big Daddy.
He doesn't care.
Adam Sandler, perennial Razzie nominee and winner. And it's like, what are we even doing here, guys?
Yeah.
They gave him like worst actor for Jack and Jill and worst actress.
Good.
I mean, like, what is the goal?
What is the goal?
You know what you didn't do? Put Al Pacino in the Dunkachina song. So you know what? You're done. Yeah. Get out of here.
This movie had a budget of $45 million and it made $5 million.
Yes, it makes $5 million.
It tanks.
Yes.
Really. This doesn't read like a movie that would get a wide release, though.
No, I'm pretty sure it got a like moderate release. Not like a super wide release. Should we just quickly talk about some of the beats in the plot here?
We already did.
I mean, we mostly did, but there are some.
We can. I seriously don't remember.
You don't remember, and it is a bummer to just be like, yeah, the Gestapo are coming for them. They are in a camp. Like, it's kind of like a bummer to talk about.
Yeah. Well, they're in a ghetto, and this is like, in Poland.
Because it's you know, we've summarized it, but like he's a shopkeep in a ghetto in Poland. One night he is hauled for being out past curfew to the officer's room for punishment. On the radio, he hears a news that there are Soviet tanks in Byzantia, mm-hmm. which is north of where the ghetto is at. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, the Soviets are essentially within like a day or two's travel. Mm-hmm. They're pushing towards us. They're going to free us.
Mm-hmm.
He goes back and he tells people he tells Liev Schreiber to convince Liev Schreiber to not kill another Nazi and go out in blaze of glory.
Yeah.
Liv Schreiber playing a former boxer who he was the manager of?
Question mark.
And at the end, he tells him, oh, the Soviets are coming. How do you know? I have a radio. Instead of just saying, I overheard this radio, he insists he has a radio, which now built the lie up bigger. Simultaneously, he has encountered a little girl who escaped from one of the trains named Nina and is sheltering her in his attic. And then, like, the lie continues to grow, as we discussed, on and so forth, until eventually he's elected as, like, all the Jews in the ghetto decide to unionize, elect him as their leader, and he's going to tell them when the Soviets are coming. They're going to give him a signal, and he gives them all the hope that they're going to be rescued, which ultimately does not come true.
Mm-hmm.
But it gives them hope and dignity in their final days.
In the Wikipedia, it's funny because it's like, His lies gives some hope and humor to the isolated ghetto inhabitants. He also has a real secret. He is hiding a young Jewish girl named Lena who escaped from a extermination camp deportation train. However, the Gestapo learns of the mythical radio and begins a search for the resistance hero who dares it to operate it. That paragraph break is missing the full middle of the movie.
Yeah, it's missing like an hour of the movie.
Yeah.
But Stuart, you know who's in this movie?
Alan Arkin?
Yeah, hit the button.
Yeah. Wow. This is a disaster.
Very good. I knew we had to hit the button because Alan Arkin is in this movie.
Alan Arkin is in it.
Delivering a substantially more engaged performance than he gave in Dumbo 2019 to Tim Burton.
You know who else in this movie?
Who?
Michael Jeter.
Michael Jeter, yeah.
We got another Michael Jeter.
We love Michael Jeter.
Back to back Michael Jeter.
Bob Balaban also in this movie.
Bob Balaban is in this.
It's a good lineup of guys.
This is the thing. It's like, I feel like there's a world where this movie could have been good, but it's just Robin is like being at the helm of this.
Is a problem.
Like, but the scene with him and the girl does work very well,
though. With him and the girl works. Like, a world where Alan Arkin is playing the lead of this movie. It's a very different movie. But I think that movie maybe works. Because, like, what's Robin's, like, personal struggle he has to overcome in this movie? He doesn't really have one. Like, besides the fact that he is in a ghetto.
Yeah.
Like, besides that,
in
like...
In which case, everyone kind of has
everyone's in the same problem. He doesn't really have, like, anything he's trying to overcome. Besides the fact that he's, like, not an important person, and now he has important thrust upon him.
Yeah.
I like all the Alan Arkin stuff where he's just like, I've had a radio this whole time. But now the Gestapo are going to come looking, so I'm going to destroy my radio. You always like a good Alan Arkin, but grumpy performance.
Yeah.
Well, let's go to his house. We'll find the radio.
But then he gets taken by, he volunteer. So the Gestapo learn of this radio and they start searching for it. They take some hostages and they announce that if the person who doesn't turn in the radio by whatever time, we're going to start killing hostages. And so Robin decides, I'm going to turn myself in. And he notices that they are packing up the ghetto.
Yes.
Right? You notice this, right?
Yeah.
They are on the way of leaving, which means, like, the Russians are coming. Like, we can tell.
The Russians are coming.
This is clear, but we don't know when and how soon. And so he gets taken to the same, Nazi officer. Yeah. And they torture him for information.
Yeah.
They, like, start dunking him in a water tank or whatever. And he eventually says, that's my radio. And he points to the radio in the German officer's office. And they have like a back on one-on-one moment. And he's like, so. And he's like, we have an impasse, you and I. So this is what we're going to do. And then we cut to, we're in the ghetto. All the Jews have been rounded up. And they have their luggage in cases. They're about to be loaded onto the trains. But before they are... Jacob is on the gallows essentially. Yeah. And he's like, this guy's claimed to have a radio and he's claimed to have known movements about the war. And this has all been a lie.
Yes.
Go ahead and tell them. And he doesn't say anything.
Yeah.
And he just smiles at the officer. And then the older officer guy
shoots him
and he dies. They let everyone on the train.
We haven't seen Robin bleeding out before on a gallows. So
we've never seen Robin bleeding out on the gallows.
He has died in a movie?
I'm sure.
That we've covered?
I'm sure. I'm sure he's died in a movie.
I'm trying to think.
Yeah,
he dies at the end of the world, according to Garps. It actually is not the first time we've seen him get shot.
Yeah, he gets shot.
He gets shot at the end of Garp.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like skimming through.
He doesn't die in Fisher King.
I think this is the second Robin Williams death.
Wow.
Within a movie.
Wow. That's kind of crazy.
He technically dies a second after The Secret Agent ends. Yeah. Oh, he dies in Hamlet, too. He gets stabbed in the chest. That's right.
Yeah, we barely see it.
That's three.
Barely see it in Hamlet. So, yeah, he gets shot. They load up the rest of the Jews on the trains, and then the trains take off, and then we get the... Hold on a second. Let me...
So, did you recognize the little girl playing Nina in this?
No.
She played young Winona in The House of the Spirits.
Oh, nice. They're on the train.
No, pause it. I got to talk about this. Nothing hits more in a movie than when you introduce a Russian character and you break all Sonic rules of your movie to introduce the Soviet anthem music. Like,
every time a Russian character in this fucking...
No, like, this movie does not have a score that sounds like this at all. It is, of course, like, the train pulls up, the Russians come, you hit this shit.
I mean,
my favorite example is, I think we might talk about this in the show before, Creed 3.
Oh.
You see Creed 3?
Yes.
So Creed 3, the sequel to Creed 2. Creed 2 obviously has a lot of, like, Ivan Drago business in it.
Yes.
Creed 3, Victor Drago is, like, just one of the boxers in the movie.
Yes.
The movie has a score by Joseph Bradley, who's, like, a disciple of Ludwig Göransson. And the whole score of that movie, it's very hip-hop influenced.
Yes.
But the first two Creeds.
Yes.
For the Jonathan Majors, Michael B. Jordan fight. Two-thirds of the way through the movie, he reaches out to his buddy, Victor Drago, and he's like, can you help me train? And, like, Michael B. Jordan walks in and it's like, like that kind of music. And then, like, the camera turns around. Victor Drago starts like, oh! It's like, where the fuck did this come from?
I want to look it up because that seems really funny.
It's so funny.
Creed 3 training montage. Oh, I think I found it.
Did you find it?
I think I might have found it. Maybe. You see that man right there? Do you? Hello.
Look out. And I'm who the fuck want what with me? Heart is out and I say that reluctantly.
Trying to find, like, where he fights Victor Drago. I don't know. Maybe it's a different one. But yeah, I see where you're... Wait, no, I missed it. Did I miss it? Oh, no. Okay. I think I got it. All right, but now it's got me on a tangent. How fucking good is the music to the Creed trilogy?
Well, they're great.
Fucking
they're
great.
Movies.
Yeah, the Russians show up. The train stops. Lena, the little girl, looks out and she sees the tanks. She sees there's like an accordion player and a guy playing like a little flute or something.
I might have found it.
Connect to the board.
Oh, yeah. I found it. It's not the chanting, but it is. It's like suddenly like Soviet horns just overtake the score. Let's go.
Come on. Oh, it's like very subtle.
It brings in like Soviet horns.
Yeah.
It happens a few times in this movie.
Yes.
But this is the specific instance where it's just like, Soviet orange. It's so funny.
Anyway. Yeah, and there's some musicians.
But she imagines like the full jazz band with like the Andrew sisters basically singing along to like the Russians coming and stopping the train. And then we get a last close up on the little girl's eyes watching this whole imagination. Mm-hmm. And then the movie ends. So you mentioned that was like an alternative ending?
No, so like, because what Robin says is...
Oh, and they were just hauled off to the train, and that was the last time I ever saw them.
Yeah, that's the last time any of them were ever seen.
But this is like an imaginative ending or whatever, that they were freed by the Russians.
Yeah, so Robin says, like, that's the last... They were all brought to the train and taken off to the camps, and they were never seen again. And then you see the train, and then the music kind of kicks back to them with, like, it's a little quirk again. He goes, but what if that's not what happened? He's continuing to tell lies, like, tell the story.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of one of the sad facts about the Holocaust and World War II that, like,
when Stuart drops on the mic right now. You want to hear one of the sad facts about the Holocaust?
Do you?
Yes. The whole thing is a sad fact.
Yeah, but...
It's like, Stuart, you want to hear the sad fact about death that happens? Like,
all right, well, never mind that.
It's just not heavy with it. Say it.
Just, well, it's... The thing is, like, you know, if you try and look up, like, how many, like, concentration camps were, like, quote-unquote, like, liberated.
Yeah.
It's actually not, like, that much. Because often what would happen is if, like, there were ever any, like, major advancements by the Allied forces entering into territories that had concentration camps, a lot of times the Nazis were just... They would just annihilate everybody there and then move on.
That's how they would do it.
Yeah. So it's, like, the heroic story of, like, Jewish prisoners being, like, liberated... Yeah. Wasn't that common.
Yeah. Of a thing. I mean, there's the incredible Band of Brothers episode about it.
Yes.
Which is like the best episode of that show.
Yeah.
It was, and like obviously the end of Schindler's List, it's wasn't like a super, you know, a lot of people were freed, but there's just tremendous evil in the occurrence of it.
Yeah.
It was a genocide. It was awful.
Yeah. Holocaust movie.
Yeah. Holocaust movie. Watch Schindler's List.
Watch Schindler's List.
It's a great movie. Angelica? I want you to know, Stuart just asked me, Jeff, do you want to hear a sad fact about the Holocaust? That's what I said. I said, what, you mean the whole thing? Cameo from Angelica.
Liev Schreiber is in this movie.
Liev Schreiber is in this movie.
He's also in another Jewish Holocaust movie.
Is he?
Have you seen the 2008 film Defiance?
I have not.
It's about three... Jewish brothers that fled into the woods of Belarus and started like a resistance camp.
Yeah. Liev Schreiber is actually Jewish.
And you know what Liev Schreiber does in the movie? What? He splinters off from the group and joins the Red Army.
Sucks for
that
him.
That is actually a thing that happens in the movie. But yeah.
Liev Schreiber's great.
Pretty decent movie.
I saw Caught Stealing, a movie starring Austin Butler.
Yeah.
Liev Schreiber plays like a Jewish mobster in it. He's good. Very funny.
One of my other good friends is in Defiance.
One of your good friends is in Defiance?
Yeah, I'll let you find out later.
I'm opening it right now. Oh, yeah, your good friend is in that movie. Look at that. That was right before he played Sabretooth.
Yeah.
Liev Schreiber played Sabretooth.
That's right. I have nothing left to say about Jacob the Liar. Movie did bad reviews.
They should make a sequel called Jacob the Truther. I don't know.
What would that be That's about, Jeff?
He tells facts.
Is that one of the other sad facts about the Holocaust?
Bob Balaban supremacy. That's all I got.
Next week, we're hitting a centennial moment.
A centennial moment? Oh, shit.
Because we're going to be talking about Bicentennial Man. I have never seen Bicentennial Man. Have you?
I have not seen Bicentennial Man.
Okay. I've heard a lot about this movie, though.
Yes.
Heard a lot.
Why they put him in the suit.
Why they put him in the suit, man. Alex Wilson last week. Yes, I've heard a lot about Bicentennial Man, so I'm excited to talk about that. Directed by Chris Columbus.
Yeah, our final Columbus, I think.
Yep.
The thing about Bicentennial Man is that I have not seen it. I have been told many times it is bad. Sure. I am prepared.
To love it?
To like this movie. I am terrified. I'm going to come out a Bicentennial Man truth.
I did not realize Sam Neill is in Bicentennial Man.
It is a movie about a robot who is trying to find out if he is a person. Do you know what my interests in films are?
Robots.
Movies about robots trying to find out if they're people.
Do you like Ex Machina?
I love Ex Machina. I fear that I am going to like Bicentennial Man, and I need to stop myself. We need to cancel the show right now.
No, it's great that it's Bicentennial Man and AI back to back.
It is. That will be the one thing, is that AI will be so good that I won't even like... I will just basically want to speed run the Bicentennial Man episode because I want to talk about AI.
Yeah.
AI is like one of the great movies.
Thank you.
When was the last time you watched AI?
Long time.
Get ready, because we're talking about it in 2 weeks, guys. It's incredible work.
If only it was like...
That's my impression of the song that they wrote for AI.
If only if it was like relevant.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you all for listening to this episode of Jake with the Liars. Sorry it was a short episode. We didn't have much to say.
Yeah.
Robin plays a Jew.
There's only so much we really wanted to say about the Holocaust this week, folks. I'm sorry.
Yeah. But thank you all for listening. If you like this episode, please remember to rate, review, comment, like, subscribe, whatever platform listener on which we're on. Many special thanks to Michael Bay and Bogum Smith for the theme music, and Rebecca for the graphic design. Thank you all so much. Join us next week for Bicentennial Man.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.